Beer and Honey, the German football pod. Beer and Honey, the German football pod. In today's final episode of our big season preview review, we'll be looking at a very odd couple. Yes, the best team in Germany still, or perhaps not much longer so, we'll discuss that, Bayern Munich, but also a look at newly promoted Darmstadt. But before we get into it, let me remind you that Beer and Honey needs your support. Please become a member of the Beer and Honey Supporters Club. Even better, if you can, become an ultra, take out a season ticket and you will get a reward and, of course, special episodes for all supporters exclusively right to you on any platform that you might use to listen to us. Thank you very much in advance. Thank you to those who, of course, already are supporting us. We couldn't do it without you. And here to help us with that look forward and back is our resident Eintracht Frankfurt reporter, close enough to Darmstadt and close enough to Munich because he lives just across the border in Italy, Ronald Reng. Ronnie, welcome to the show.
Hello, Alfred. Thanks for the invitation. I'm always happy to slug off Bayern Munich, so I certainly will enjoy this today.
Wonderful. And of course, I'm here, Raphael Honigstein, and my colleague, Christoph Biermann. Christoph, hello.
Hello.
Ronnie, before we go and talk about Bayern and Darmstadt, Christoph wanted to have a slightly general look at the appetite for German football this summer. The Women's World Cup and the German football women's football team just registered a very big ratings hit when they lost against Colombia. More than 10 million people tuned in. That was comfortably beating the men's team against Colombia, which albeit was only a friendly a few weeks ago, and not far off the record for the European final last year at Wembley. But Christoph, that's not the only sign that people just can't get enough of football, despite all the doom-mongering, I might say, that we've seen in certain papers and magazines over the recent years.
Yeah, there's obviously a great hunger for football in Germany, especially live football. When we look at the numbers, the season has started, not in the Bundesliga. We have to wait two more weeks. Eins, zwei. The Germans' cup starts in 2 weeks and the Bundesliga in 3 weeks. But the second division has already started, and also the four Regionalligen, so the fourth level of German football. And there we got a fantastic crowd when two former Bundesliga teams met. Alemannia Aachen played against Wuppertaler SV, and they had 27,300 people watching, an incredible number. But also the start of the second Bundesliga, great crowd, sellout crowd at Hamburg playing Hertha, opening the season, 57,000. Kaiserslautern playing St. Pauli in front of 44. Fortuna Düsseldorf against relegated Hertha had 40. Even Hanover against promoted Elversberg had over 30,000, a sellout crowd in Osnabrück, and with 15,000. So I find that really amazing. There's a lot of talk about the best second division ever. We had that in
that was last year.
That was last year already.
I think that was 2 years ago.
or 2 years ago, and I don't know, Ronnie, what do you make of these numbers, and what do you think?
Well, I think it's a kind of movement which started already like 20 years ago, and I think local pride became more important to people than the quality of football. I think it's something which came from England, actually. In England, when I lived in England, actually 30 years ago, there was a Champions League game on Wednesday, like Liverpool against Barcelona, and people would go to a second or third division game in Wigan, and it would be watched by 20,000 or something. So you support your local club. That started, like, as I said, like 20 years ago. And actually the atmosphere in the stadium became kind of carnival, particularly in Frankfurt. Maybe they were one of the first who started it. And another movement started from that you're trying to become the best club by, well, best supporting it. And we have like 20,000 people going on an away trip quite often these days. I think Magdeburg, for example, they took 15 or 20,000 to a normal second division game last year in Hanover. So people are trying to create their own events, if you want to call it like this. And even at places like Lübeck, which none of your listeners would have heard of, actually Willy Brandt, the former Chancellor of Germany, was born there. It's a small town, northern town, and they play in the third division now, but they played in the fourth division last year, and they got crowds like 12 to 15,000 people. Like 20 years ago, people who were interested in football from Lübeck, they would travel to Hamburg to watch Hamburger SV 1 hour away because it was the best football. These days, it seems all to be, I go with my mates to Lübeck and to my home team, and we feel like we are the best city in Germany. It seems much more about that. Giving people a sense of belonging, making people feel at home.
Yeah, I think it's spot on what you said. I totally agree. But we also did see some decent football in the second Bundesliga. I don't know if any of you saw this opening match between Hamburg and Schalke. It was a spectacular 5-3. I mean, defensive lines that didn't make their managers happy. But also St. Pauli winning at Kaiserslautern 2-1. They started the season where they ended it last year under their young coach Fabian Hürzeler, who was only 30 right now, and he is probably one of the top talents among German football coaches right now. But yeah, but I think it's that's enough about second division football right now, and maybe we talk about now about last year's winner of the second division, Darmstadt.
Well, they didn't win the league. They should have won the league, but they spoiled it on the last day of play when they were overtaken by Heidenheim. But if you say we should stop talking about second division football, maybe we need to go on to, talking about second division football. That's exactly what Darmstadt will play even in the Bundesliga, I think, meaning they will play a high intensity, high speed football, not looking so much, for the quality of the passing game, really. I think if you look at the teams who've gone up from the second division to the first division, lots of time they had one big problem. They were dominating the second division and obviously had a lot of the ball. They were outplaying other teams. And suddenly they had to drastically change their style of play because in the Bundesliga they had to defend more. This time, I think Darmstadt and Heidenheim, they have this big advantage that already in the second division last year, they both played a football which was much more based on fitness, on defensive stability, on quick counterattacks or transitions between defense and attack. So they have lots of parts of the puzzle which they could use even in the Bundesliga. And that gives them maybe the big advantage and maybe the only advantage if you look at the individual quality of the team. At Darmstadt, I don't see that many players in this team which would play in another Bundesliga side, to be honest.
They lost two of their key players to another Bundesliga side. Two of their players went to Augsburg. One is Philipp Tietz, a center forward who scored 12 goals and gave 5 assists last season. They sold him for 2.2 million. And the other one is central defender Patrick Pfeiffer, who left on a free transfer. And I think they tried to replace them by very similar players. One is probably known by some people in the UK. It's Fraser Hornby, a 23-year-old from Northampton, but playing for Scotland. He comes from the Everton youth setup and went around Europe quite a lot. In the end, he landed at Stade Reims, and from there he was loaned out to Oostende last season, where he scored a dozen goals or so, and they bought him for more or less the amount they got from for Philipp Tietz. And there's also Christoph Klarner coming in, a central defender. They paid 2 million for him, coming in from Fortuna Düsseldorf. Ronny, so they're trying to do the same thing as last season with a bit of different players.
Yes, I think they've got quite a few quality central defenders. They can switch even from a three-back line to a four-back line. So I wouldn't worry that much about the defense. The big question mark really is, can Fraser Hornby bang in the goals? I think he scored around 10 goals in the Belgium league. Will he be good enough for the Bundesliga? That's the big question mark, because last year, literally, they just used Tietz as their one and all strikers. They used to play with one big striker who can hold the ball, who can move around, and then they would have three players around him who move around all the time. I think there's particular one guy who looks interesting to me. That's a Austrian guy called Honsak. He had a lot of bad luck with injury last season, but he's very quick. He's got a sweet left foot. He does, unusual things with the ball. So if he can get fit this season, he might bang in a few goals. But is Fraser Hornby the great man of Northampton, not even known in his hometown probably, is he good enough for the Bundesliga? That's the big question mark. But then again, I think you look at, as I tried to explain before, as a team who will try to win games by basically making other teams nervous, getting them out of, making them restless, really, by attacking them all the time quite aggressively. I think Darmstadt won't wait all the time at the back. They will try to attack in midfield to win the ball there. And, they're a team with a, it's a cliche, the team spirit is quite important. Lots of players, you will have seen it, have now a key tattooed on some parts of their body. Rafi, I'm sure, is a big Darmstadt follower. You know all about the key, don't you?
Please enlighten us.
No, it's the key of success. Because last season, I think their manager, Thorsten Lieberknecht, I don't know where, but at some part he saw that, you would have seen it, that big paper key, which if somebody bought or built a new house, the building company sometimes for the big pictures hands over a massive giant key to him, the golden key. And Lieberknecht somewhere saw this paper key and thought, oh, that's a good idea to motivate my players. And he went to the dressing room with this big golden key and said to the player, that's the key to success. We need to find it in this game. And it became a kind of running gag. Before every tactical session, he explained to the players, now the key to success today is, and he showed the key. And some players, and I think even the manager now after the season, tattooed the key of success to some parts of their body.
Okay, that's obviously better than to have an eagle in the dressing room, like Eintracht Frankfurt had in the under Klaus Toppmöller. We talked about it, and because you can have the key every week and or every day. But before we move on to talk about mighty Bayern, what's your bet? Will the key and whatever they have to offer be enough to stay in the Bundesliga?
Well, Rafi is quite quiet today, our big Darmstadt expert. I would love to hear his opinion.
Well, Ronny, we got you on the show for lots of money to provide the insight for Darmstadt, so I don't want to steal any of your thunder.
Right. I think they will find it very difficult. If you look at the team, you would think they got certain values. Yes, they are bound to stay up just to crap it at the end, become 15th or 16th. But then you ask yourself, well, who will go down then? And I don't see that many teams this season, like last year, like Schalke, who are bound to go down. I mean, there's always Bochum, but I think they did tremendously well last season and probably just maybe can take some spirit away from that. And even, you know, perfect maybe their style of play, which they developed last season when Thomas Letsch, the new manager, came in from the Netherlands. So Stuttgart, I don't know. They have some quality. They played better football than the results suggested. So basically, I don't see anybody who Darmstadt could rely on to play worse than them.
Well, some people might say that Bayern had to rely on others playing worse than them to find a way of winning the Bundesliga last season, perhaps not their most deserved of titles. They somehow did it, but of course, largely thanks to Dortmund messing things up on the final day of the season. This year, with Thomas Tuchel in charge for the full season and a preseason, and Bayern trying to make some key changes for the playing personnel, it is supposed to be a very different type of season. Ronnie, looking from the not so far distance across the Alps to one of your favorite teams in Germany, how do you see Bayern shaping up? And will they find a way to address all these big issues that they fought and struggled with last season?
Well, I think it's really exciting because you don't know what will be going on this season. Lots of time you had a feeling with Bayern Munich, okay, they will win the league, they might do well in the Champions League, they got a solid, stabilized team. But I think none of this can be said this season. In theory, they have a great manager who knows his tactics. They have quite a good squad with a few question marks still hanging over it. But after last season, where they basically, after Julian Nagelsmann had been sacked, which was a big, big mistake, the team simply imploded. And you will ask yourself, will they be back on track? And I think the big, big question mark for me is, how good are Kimmich, Goretzka and Musiala in midfield? How good are they really? Because if we look at them, lots of us would have said, well, they're world-class players. But after last season, I ask myself, can they be the heart, the core of that Bayern Munich team for 4 or 5 years, the three of them together, or at least two of the three, Kimmich and Musiala, and maybe with Goretzka? Or have we all, well, overestimated their quality?
I think you're right, because we've ended up in a position where instead of having a Bayern team where you know all these players and what their jobs are, and then maybe you change a few things around the fringes, it feels as if almost everybody does not enjoy the full confidence of Tuchel, or doesn't seem to have the kind of standing and recognition that we used to take for granted a few years ago, starting with, you know, Manuel Neuer. What position, what condition will he be when he comes back? The center backs, Matthijs de Ligt has played well, but they signed Min Jae Kim from Napoli. Upamecano is still trying to feel his way in. Lucas Hernandez has left. Benjamin Pavard is still there, but he doesn't want to be there. So it doesn't feel like a particularly settled back four. On the right, Thomas Tuchel is still trying to bring in Kyle Walker. On the left, Alphonso Davies has been stalling in his development in the last couple of years. Midfield, Ronnie talked about, and up front, in the absence of Harry Kane, you're still, at the moment, as we record this pod on the day that a delegation from Bayern is flying out to London to meet Daniel Levy to see if they can find an agreement, Bayern still don't have that focal point that they were so clearly missing last season. And it's interesting, as you said, Ronnie, because I thought that Bayern, with a full preseason and Thomas Tuchel having the ability to shape the team, will be in a much stronger position. And maybe they will be in 3 weeks' time. But now there seems to be a lot of uncertainty. And as we saw last year, that uncertainty seemed to have a really negative effect on a lot of these players.
The big, big question at the moment is, where everybody's excited, is will they get Harry Kane or won't they get him? And I think it was quite a risky operation even to go for him, because there was always the danger, and there still is the danger, that they won't get him. And what will they do if they don't get him? You know, on the 30th of August, they realized, okay, Danny Levy is not letting him go for 120 million euros. What we do now? Just then bang on the money to on the table to Frankfurt, saying, okay, now we take Muani. It will be very, very difficult, you know. And there's, in a way, it's very exciting that they're even trying to get Harry Kane, because I think it would be the really the first world-class icon coming to the German Bundesliga for what, for how many years? I think maybe for, we have to go back to 1977 when Kevin Keegan came to Germany. I don't think, you know, a world-class icon who's still at the height of his career had come to Germany since then. Raul was there from Spain, but he was already sitting on the bench at Real Madrid when he came to Schalke. So it would be a massive and an exciting move. But I think it's very, very dangerous that you set your hopes on trying to get a player in a key position and might be left without getting him.
There's also Sadio Mane leaving. I mean, it's not decided yet, but it looks like as if he will play in Saudi Arabia, like so many others. What else will happen at Bayern? I mean, is it all Kane or not Kane? Or are there other players that they are targeting? Are there others that will leave after they return from Japan, where they are right now? For me, the picture is a bit blurred, what they really want, where they're really heading to, apart from this Kane story that's overshadowing everything else.
Yeah, and part of the reason why it's blurred is because, of course, you have all these changes in the background. This team is really the product of three or four different coaches who all had their own little ideas. They don't tend to really dominate the transfer policy at a place like Bayern, but one guy likes that player. And Conny Leimer was, you know, signed because Julian Nagelsmann worked with him. Now he arrives. There's a different coach there. So that's one of the factors. You've also had a few players who I think, having been there for a while and feel now my time is up and I want to do something different. Lucas Hernandez has already left. Benjamin Pavard, we talked about. He's got 1 year left. I think he's waiting for an offer to come in. Bayern would probably be quite happy to sell at this point rather than lose him for nothing next season. But are probably fairly relaxed about the situation. And you've heard Thomas Tuchel very interestingly talk about the possibility of Leon Goretzka leaving, which is something that we wouldn't have expected from any Bayern manager over the last 2-3 years. But Goretzka's form and performance has suffered so much, especially in the second half of the season, that Bayern feel it might not be the worst problem in the world to lose him. And of course, then we really have to talk about the midfield, because I don't think they can really go into the season with Kimmich, Gravenberg and Leimer and Musiala if you want to play him deeper. They would probably still need that Declan Rice type of player that they, of course, targeted, but without real conviction, because all the money and all the effort, the focus is going towards making Kane happen. But it shows you that once again, that a player that was considered totally pivotal to this Bayern generation even is no longer seen as safe. And part of that is, I think, with Tuchel being very ruthless and not really having that sense of keeping the whole dressing room happy and looking after these German players, especially that Hansi Flick was a big factor for him and big factor for his success at Bayern. Tuchel doesn't seem to really care that much. He wants to see players playing well. And I think in the case of Goretzka, talking to some people at the club, there's a concern that the stuff that makes him special, which is the box-to-box play, the scoring of goals, the physical dominance that he sometimes has, we all have to think back how he really dominated Lionel Messi in those two games against PSG in the Champions League. He played really well. That because his physical condition isn't quite right, he doesn't have, unfortunately, a lot to fall back on in terms of being technical or, you know, being very strategic in his positioning. His physique, his physicality is his identity. And without that, he's really struggling at the moment. And there's a big concern at Bayern that he might not regain that full fitness anytime soon. And that's why we've seen Tuchel being quite negative about him.
But I think there's also a wider picture to it. Bayern Munich always took their strength from being the number one football club in Germany. And basically, they were always buying the best players in the Bundesliga and the best German players. And that gave them a core in the team and a lot of stability, because they always would have six or seven players there dominating the team and German football for years. But it seems in the last 2 or 3 years, or even the whole era of sports director Hasan Salihamidžić, the whole planning became much more short-term. And players, like you said, with Goretzka, would be questioned and even sent away after one bad half year. And you explained it well. It seemed, I thought, with Thomas Tuchel coming in and now with the new sports executive from Salzburg, Mr. Freund, coming in, they would try to plan it more middle term at least. But it all seems to be about short-term planning again. You know, with the goalkeeper position now, okay, nobody knows how good will be Manuel Neuer be when he returns. And to be honest, if we talk about the world-class Manuel Neuer, that was like 6-7 years ago. He's still been a very, very good goalkeeper, but he hasn't been that dominating figures for some years. And they haven't found... which should be the easiest part for such a big football club, a proper substitute for him. And now you hear they are trying to look at De Gea, they're looking at the Brentford keeper, but all these keepers are, well, bringing in somebody. They could easily, and I would have done that easily, buy like Oliver Baumann from Hoffenheim or even Schwebe from Cologne, you know, some really good quality German number one Bundesliga keepers. And they would have a backup, and they would remain that core of the German or the Bundesliga 11, the best Bundesliga 11, what they always had. But they gave up deliberately that kind of power which they had, that buying power over the Bundesliga.
Ronnie, you talked about Christoph Freund, the new sports director or whatever the official name or official role is, a guy who is known for long-term planning. I mean, he worked at Salzburg very successfully, bringing in young players through the academy, but also players from abroad like Erling Haaland and Sadio Mane, for example. So a guy who knows how to build a club from the sporting side. But Bayern is Bayern, and it doesn't only need to people who do their job properly, it also needs people to sell the job properly. So somebody who talks for Bayern. Can Christoph Freund be that guy?
Well, this is one question which remains to be seen, but I think... First of all, it was a bold move and it was a right move to go for somebody who has the football knowledge. And basically, it was an admission that they couldn't go on just looking for somebody who comes from the Bayern family to do that job, that they needed quality at the job. If you remember how Hasan Salihamidžić got the job like 6 years ago, well, at the time I was preparing my book about the biography about Miroslav Klose. And I remember interviewing Uli Hoeneß, the president at the time. And Hoeneß, he gave me a kind of exclusive. He thought, oh, it's good, I tell you for your book. We went for Miroslav. We offered him the job as a sports director. And I thought to myself, now, that's very kind of you. That's a good exclusive for me. But I'm not so sure if that's the right move from you, because Miroslav, he himself never had thought about becoming a sports director, and he had no experience in that job. And in the end, he turned down the job, and Hasan Salihamidžić got the job. And, well, to quote David Bowie, he was an absolute beginner. And what do you expect from somebody who's never had any experience in the job to do the job probably right from the start just because he had this Bayern genes, as they say? I think they had to change their policy, and they did by bringing in Christoph Freund. Obviously, he has to look for a different kind of players now, being at Bayern. It's not all about developing players. Bayern deliberately say, we don't want to develop players. We don't have the time for that. We are a big stage club. We bring in big players, and they have to perform right away. But I think, again, we see somebody with a knowledge of the market. The last guy who was at Bayern Munich was Michael Reschke, who came in from Leverkusen and who had worked the market for some years. Maybe Reschke, again, didn't have the personality to represent Bayern Munich in public. But I think at least there's somebody who can work the market well.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, Christoph Freund is, apart from being really well connected and having had an eye for top players, is somebody who I think will perhaps not take that prominent role when it comes to talking after games, being the face of Bayern. I think a lot of that will stay with Tuchel this season. And I would expect Freund to be more in the background rather than at the coalface and grow into his role. He has a strong Austrian accent, which is not so different from the Bavarian one. So it's not a bad fit, but it is still, I think, going to be a bit of a shock to see somebody talk who is not a former Bayern player, who is not somebody who's closely connected on behalf of the club. So I think Freund will be very smart in taking a lot of time before he develops that public persona. But what's interesting is that, and I think, Ronnie, we should talk about this a little bit more, that short-term nature of doing things is very much reflected in what Bayern doing at the moment. I mean, them targeting 33-year-old Kyle Walker on the right side of defense, I don't think would have happened without Thomas Tuchel having the kind of power that he has, maybe only this window, to say, I want these things to happen. Because there is no sporting director in place, Christoph Freund only takes over in September, because of that vacuum that exists with a new leadership coming in. Also, they don't have any real sporting background, with the exception of Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, who's come back to help the board. It shows you that Tuchel, I think, is thinking, of course, the club needs to be in a good position 5 years' time. But will I be there Bayern at that point? Only if I can have success over the next two. So for me, my short-term needs trump the needs of the club. And here the club and the coach have to work together. But Tuchel has a lot more leeway to make this happen. And even you might say Bayern targeting Harry Kane is a bit of a short-term move, because if this happens, how many good seasons are you going to get out of Kane? Three, maybe four? I mean, you might say that's enough. But he's not going to be the long-term solution for Bayern's number nine situation. They'll have to, in 2 years' time, probably start thinking about the succession plan for Kane. Some people in the club say that Matthias Till is so good that he will somehow develop into that player. But of course, he's a very different type of striker. He's not a classic number nine. He's more like a Thierry Henry type of striker who will probably play from wider positions. So yeah, a lot of things in flux, and a lot of things that we took for granted when Bayern won the Champions League only 3 years ago suddenly seem to be up in the air and to be decided.
And it probably all came from, well, too high expectations after the Guardiola years. All the people took it for granted that Bayern Munich now had to dominate all the time, like they did with Guardiola. But I think really it was Heinkes and then Guardiola. You know, you had 3 or 4 years when they were absolutely dominating the Bundesliga, when they were one class above everybody. And I think a feeling creaked in, really. Now we have to expect that from Bayern all the time. And that's why I thought the sacking of Julian Nagelsmann was basically a rash decision. If you look at the numbers and if you look at the games, there were the odd shocking game when they lost 0-5 in the cup against Mönchengladbach the first year. But if you look at the first half of the season they played last season, I think they hammered in 5 or more goals 9 times to opponents. I think they just lost 1 or 2 in the Bundesliga. So I think they were an ordinary Bundesliga leader, if you can say so. But it seems the expectation was like, oh no, we've seen that one game against Leverkusen. Yes, and the one game against Mönchengladbach. It's not working well because in that two games, the midfield wasn't pressing enough. There was lapses of concentration. And then you get the odd 1 or 2 old players who, well, are becoming old and blaming their loss of form on the manager. And what we get from that is even more short-term solutions because they're panicking and thinking, okay, we have to change that. A new manager, you explained it well, walks in, Thomas Tuchel. He said, okay, I have to get a good right back right now. And I don't care how old he is. I don't care how much money we spend on him. I mean, if you look financially on the Harry Kane transfer, if it happens, I think it's, 120 million euros plus his salary for 3 or 4 years for a player, which you can't resell. And then if you compare it to buying Muani, for example, who will be world-class definitely in 1 or 2 if he's not now, which you could resell if you want to in 4 or 5 for even a higher number of money, then it's, a very bold move to go for Harry Kane.
I agree with you, and I think Muani would have financially been the better option, but I think Bayern feel that they cannot gamble, if you will, on Muani coming good in a year's time or 2 years' time. They need somebody that will guarantee them the goals. And I guess with so few number nines on the market, Harry Kane sort of is the best thing they can think of in terms of guaranteed goals. Funnily enough, he often plays in a very deep position and will maybe have to change his game, because if he goes really deep with a team that has so much possession as Bayern, you know, he'll be behind the center backs at times. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, just a word on Julian Nagelsmann. I think you're right in everything you say. At the same time, there are still a lot of people who have no personal agendas who actually really like Julian in the club, who will tell you that the biggest problem was probably making them miss that decision too late, that they felt that the team had lost its confidence, had lost its identity. Julian couldn't quite connect on a emotional level with these players to make up for perhaps some of the tactical demands that he had of them, which were perhaps sometimes over demanding on them. And that when Tuchel came in, he found a team that really didn't know anymore. You know, am I a regular? Is my position here? When I played, is this my role? Is that my role? And there was a massive confusion. And I think that Julian is a fantastic manager and will have learned so much from his experience. But I think Bayern, and I can tell you this really from whoever you speak to, with the possible exception of Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, they all feel that the real big issue was perhaps not making that decision earlier.
I think that's what they say in hindsight. I mean, maybe I'm talking to the wrong people at the club and in the team. I just know 2 players in the team. And I fully agree. Not everybody had a proper personal relationship with the manager, but the situation was definitely not like with Niko Kovac, where they felt they were suffering from that manager, where they really were, an anger was growing within them. I think there were some players in the team who were crumbling, who were not satisfied. And I agree, I don't know enough, but from what I hear, maybe Julian's emotional approach to them wasn't good enough to keep them in. But it's certain, I think what you said, that the team was lacking an identity, I think that just came afterwards, after the sacking. because so many players were quite shocked. Oh, they're sacking the manager now when we're in three competitions, when we thought we hadn't done that bad, then it must be really us who are not good enough. So I think the shell shock really set in that day when they sacked him. And I think that talk of him sacking him earlier, and I immediately think of one player who lost his confidence with Julian. And he's not one of the old guys everybody thought to. It happened to some players, but I think generally Julian identified a few mistakes he did himself. For example, talking to him after the first season, he said, I realize I'm a manager, or I always saw myself as a manager who's winning the dressing room, for example, by very innovating training sessions. And I realize lots of players at Bayern Munich don't cherish that I invent training sessions, that I give them new things to do. They are quite suspicious and think like, what he's coming up with? We've done a training routine now for 10 years. And anyway, we're Bayern Munich. We get our form by playing every three games. He doesn't have to come up with silly training, new methods or something. He realized that, and he tried to change that in the second year. And he also realized himself that his choky manner, to choke with the players, quite light manner, not went down well with everybody in the team, that some of them couldn't relate to them. I wasn't in the dressing room if he managed to change that. But I think if you look where we are now, if you look back at the sacking, I think they haven't won anything from that sacking. They even become more unstable since then. And if you look at the preseason they're having now, there are even more question marks hanging around the club. Where do we want to go? What will be our Bayern Munich core for the next few years? Will we still have the position as the big club in Germany? And I think, you know, people look at them thinking, okay, they will win the league this year easily because they're so far the good team. If you look at Dortmund, I mean, they've lost Jude Bellingham, and there's also the question, will they substitute him? But I think having lost the way Dortmund lost the last year, the seat and the title actually gave them a lot of, let's call it hunger or sense of believing. You know, the day they lost, Dortmund lost against Mainz,
it feels like a loss.
Everybody thought, okay, now the team will break down. That's the biggest shock ever. That very morning, I texted to one of the Dortmund players, their right back, Marius Wolf, because it was his birthday. And I texted him saying, well, this will be quite a great birthday party tonight. There will be a lot of people gate crashing your party. And after the game, I thought, oh no, what have I done? There will be nobody at his birthday party. He won't even hold his party, which he prepared, you know, with hiring people cooking. And a few days later, I asked him, well, how was your birthday party? And he said, well, it wasn't a party, but it was one of the biggest nights of my life because basically all the players came. All the players came. Marco Reus was one of the few players who didn't come because he was so gobsmacked he couldn't stand it. But most players came because they wanted to share that sense of belonging. Even Jude Bellingham, it was clear that he was leaving the team. He was there. And I think maybe in 1 year's time, we talk about a great bonding night because they were looking for that. We are in there together in that great moment of sadness, of great moment of loss. And I think it happened in sports lots of time that something great comes out from a big defeat. And I'm very curious, to put it that way, to see if Dortmund can give Bayern a run for their money this season.
So it's a very encouraging story you're telling here for everybody who wants to have a Bundesliga season that is dramatic to the end, and with probably having another champion after 11 endless years. And
there's always Eintracht Frankfurt.
Yeah, but running for the title, there will always be Eintracht Frankfurt, of course, hopefully. But do you see them as a competitor for the title?
Always. There's always next season, as they say in England.
Yes, just to reiterate that point, I had a chance to speak to Julian Brandt last week, and I got exactly the same feeling from them, that this was a defeat that somehow brought them together as a club, as a team, and they will manage to draw some energy and some strength from that. Whether it's enough, I think, will be largely down to Bayern, because Bayern have to have a bad season to open the door, or at least not a very good season. And I'm not sure, we don't know what season Bayern are going to have. I think if Kane comes in, then all of Bayern's problems are not necessarily solved, but they're definitely lessened by his arrival. So let's see what happens. Thank you so much, Ronny, for joining us once more and keeping the Eintracht obsession to a bare minimum. Christoph and I will say goodbye to our listeners. Thank you very much for supporting us. Remember, you can and should really become a subscriber. We need your support for the next season. Go to steadyhq.com/en/beerandhoney and come and sign up to become a member of the Beer and Honey Supporters Club. There's lots of little things we will do to reward you with, especially if you're an ultra, where you get the Beer and Honey mug. On which note, I was Raphael Honigstein.
I was Christoph Biermann, and we say bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Beer and Honey, the German football podcast.